Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
From the Apostrophe Podcast Network.
One, two, three. They all come from the unknown north. Talent, drive, and a pride worth paying for. But just because they're above the 49th parallel, it doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate them just as well. So give it up for these Canucks, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they all went away, we sure wouldn't miss them.
Steel.co.
The Canadian Star System.
Oh, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Canadian Star System, a podcast which shines the spotlight on Canadian stars, who then shine their spotlights on other Canadian stars, and eventually everyone is lit. Now, today's episode is a special one because, in the interests of everyone's shrinking attention span, it's shorter than our other episodes. We have only one guest, and this is also not an official episode because season one is done and season two doesn't start for another couple months. So this is our in-between episode of the holiday season. And speaking of holidays, I couldn't possibly do this show without my producer and co-host, Diana Francis, whom I informed would not be able to officially start her holiday until we did this. Hi, Diana.
Hello, Steve.
It's nice to see you again.
It's lovely to see you as well. And I'm sort of slightly on holiday.
Right.
So if I sound a little bit different, it's because I'm not in my podcast professional setup. I'm elsewhere using old school iPhone headphones.
Well, you sound all right to me so far.
Excellent.
Where are you coming to us from? Can you disclose that?
I am coming to you from a bedroom in Calgary.
Okay, that's definitely not too specific. Thank you. You know what? Listen, I got a question for you. I always do. My question to you is, with 2021 pretty much officially in the books now, what was your best mistake of 2021? What would you say was your best mistake?
My best mistake. Well, probably dropping a lot of money on a new chair for my home office, thinking at the moment that this is a terrible waste of money because the pandemic's almost over. And now I am so grateful that I have a really good office chair because it's been better on my back and I feel like I'm going to be spending a lot more time in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was an optimistic thought you put in the middle of that. As we speak now, still no one's sure when the end of this time that we're living in is going to be, but I sure hope it's soon.
Steve, what would you say your best mistake of 2021 was?
Well, I've been thinking about this for some time, Diana, because as you know, not all my thoughts are spontaneous. I think my best mistake of 2021 is a weekly column that I write called The Pattersonian. And the only reason I think of it as a mistake, I think it was great to have a writing exercise every week to do, to give myself a deadline, to put it out there, We have a nice little group of subscribers that look forward to it every week. So that's nice. The reason it was a mistake is because I decided I will release it on Sunday mornings, and I am a huge procrastinator. So that means I've taken my Saturdays away to do this column, which my wife is not super happy about. So I will continue doing a weekly article next year, but it will not be released on Sunday mornings and take my Saturday away. I learned. I can learn, Diana.
Well, that's why it's a best mistake and not the worst mistake.
But enough about us. You know, our guest today is an extremely important one, especially for us, not just because he is one of the most respected and popular marketing minds in Canada and the world. He's also an amazing speaker, a radio and podcast host, and the author of the new book, My Best Mistake. What a perfect segue. He's also, though, the head of the Apostrophe Podcast Network that we are a very proud part of, which makes him officially our boss, Diana. So we are interviewing our boss today. And depending on how this goes, it might be our last one. So let's try to make it a good one. Here he is, the man who keeps us under the influence by never skipping over important details, Mr. Terry O'Reilly.
Yay!
Hello, Steve and Diana. How are you?
Hello, good sir. Thank you for having us as part of this beautiful podcast family, first of all.
Well, we love having you.
You look fantastic today. You've got a bookcase behind you that you're one of the few people I believe has probably read all those books on your bookcase behind you. So well done. Room Raider, 10 out of 10, I got to say, right out of the gate.
This is my writing shed we're in right now. So this was a tool shed, a 100-year-old tool shed that was leaning and about to fall down. So we took it down, used the wood from this 100-year-old building, and then rebuilt it into a little writing shed for me. And those are all marketing books behind me.
Of course they are.
So that feeds the show, Steve.
Wow. And not only do you have an amazing writing shed, but then you also have the Airstream trailer where you do your recordings, which I am...
The Terstream.
I am so jealous of that situation you have because I love Airstreams so much.
You know what? I love them. I've always loved them too. I'm not a trailer guy. I wouldn't go vacationing in a trailer, but I've always loved Airstreams aesthetically, like just the aluminum look of them. They haven't changed since the 30s. Here's a great fact about Airstreams. 70% of Airstreams are still on the road since the 1930s because they don't rust. So we, as you may know, we had ours restored and transformed into a recording studio, and we love it.
We're going to get more into that later, but I just want to thank you, first of all, because now I understand it's Terstream, which is for Terry. I was like, why is it called Terstream? Does that have to do with Earth? So I apologize that I'm not a smarter host. Listen, Terry, Diana's going to go in depth for a few questions about your latest work, My Best Mistake, the book, first of all. But I love of course, every good book has to have a good statement right out of it. And the statement that comes from My Best Mistake is it promises to change how you think about screwing up, which is salvation for people like me who screw up a lot. My first question to you, sir, where in the, I'm sure, short list of your own mistakes does having this podcast on your podcast network rank? Where is it, up near the top?
So very high. No. We love having you. We said that. We love having you. Love it. Love the show. Well, I love working with you.
Well, thank you. No further questions. Merry Christmas, everybody.
I have been loving the book, My Best Mistake. You know, when a book comes to you at the right time for the right reasons, because it really feels like right now, literally this week before Christmas, everybody seems to be in the mud. Everybody on social media, like just with what's happening right now, all of my friends that I'm keeping in touch with, it seems like everybody is really stuck in the mud, including myself. And it's been such a great read because we forget how important mistakes can be. And I come from an improv background where, you know, we were taught through improv that mistakes are gifts, but we forget about that all the time. And my first question to you, Terry, is what happens? Why do we forget that mistakes can be gifts? Because when we're kids, we make mistakes all the time. We're constantly learning. But then it feels like we get to a point somewhere as adults where we don't think we're allowed to make mistakes anymore. Like, where does that come from?
Well, I'd have to say that we're awful hard on ourselves as a rule, I think. I don't know if it's our generation or just the zeitgeist. We're in a cancel culture right now, too. So if you make a big mistake, you can easily lose everything. So there's that hanging over all of us. I think we're too hard on ourselves as a rule. I think we torture ourselves over our mistakes, especially career mistakes, because you can, you know, you make a bad decision and you seem to go sideways in your career. People either run away from mistakes like that, or they disappear into the ether. They stop pursuing their goals or their dreams because they're so devastated by that error in their career ladder. And then they just stop. And I think the one thing, the one connective piece of tissue between all those 24 chapters, Diana, in that book is that people didn't run away from their mistakes. They owned them. They muscled through the pain. And then on the other side, there was an incredible opportunity sitting right there in the middle of the mistake that they took advantage of. And I think that's the inspiring part.
Owning the mistake is huge, too. And it's been a mantra of mine this year in particular, and pardon the language, but my mantra this year has been own your shit. Admit when you make a mistake and fix it and try and learn from it. And I often wonder, too, if like, is part of our education system the way that we have to strive to get an A, to be the best at things in our education system.
Yeah.
Do you think that that has something to do with the why when we become adults, we're afraid to make mistakes?
I think so too. I mean, I was growing up in the Catholic school system where, you know, the nuns love to take out the ruler. And Steve, you grew up in that, didn't you?
They used to measure a lot of stuff in my school, Terry.
You know, got a lot of raps on the knuckles back in those days. So you're right. I mean, you're probably right. Instilled in us very early is this fear of messing up.
Yeah.
Fear equals pain.
Yeah. It's so inspiring to read some of these stories. I mean, there's the ones that in the book that are sort of the well-known ones that we've all sort of remember from the zeitgeist, like the Dixie Chicks speaking their mind, speaking their truth. And then the way that they sort of were almost the first big victims of the cancel culture, and then sort of seeing how that comes. But I also love the stories too of the embracing small mistakes, like the fact that the logo of the Skidoo was supposed to be ski dogs.
Ski dog.
And like, just like how a small mistake like that could be thrown off completely and spend a ton of money fixing it and get mad at the designer.
Well, yeah.
Or you can go, oh, that kind of makes me laugh. Let's run with it and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. See, I probably would have been furious with that mistake because he was launching his first, Bombardier was launching his first snowmobile. It was this incredible piece of machinery. It was really evolutionary and revolutionary. And then all his launch material came back with that typo in it. And then we looked at it and said, it's ski dog. It was supposed to be dog sled, was a mechanical dog sled, right? And he looks at Ski-Doo and he goes, I like it because it sounded like skedaddle and it sounded interesting and he could trademark that word where he probably couldn't have trademarked, you know, ski dog because it's hard to trademark existing words in the dictionary, right? So it all worked out and it became one of the greatest brand names in that category.
And ironically, one of two trophies I've ever won in my life, I won a trophy for snowmobiling. So, you know, along with typing.
Oh, stop it with the typing. I knew I had no more talk of the typing. We get it, Diana. It's been so long. That's fascinating to me that, you know, a mistake ends up being a household multi-million dollar brand now. And I know there's other examples of that in the book as well. My main question is just the concept of, you know, what is a mistake, and you know, how long do you let it go down the line? When I think of mistakes, I think of planning, and there's some people that meticulously plan, and if they don't reach any guidepost along the way, then they're very frustrated with themselves. They think of themselves as a failure. Whereas, especially in the arts, I find people, you know, you're experimenting all the time, and a lot of guests that we've had on the show from Fred Penner talking about going into children's music, which was not part of his plan, to Rick Mercer's talking to Americans, coming completely as a result of an American talking to him and not trying to be funny. And then he gets this amazing show out of it. So I guess, I know, you know, the whole concept of the book is probably embrace your mistakes, but how do you know how far along to go? Did you find that in your research?
Well, that's a hard one to answer. I think everybody in that book had a different time in purgatory, you know, when they made their mistake. The Dixie Chicks were a couple of years. Steven Spielberg, when everything went wrong on the Jaws shoot, which everybody knows that story. But I thought what was interesting, which I uncovered in the research for that, was the mistake he made was he didn't test the shark out in salt water. You'd only tested it in fresh water. So that's why it all went wrong on him. He had an epiphany that one night in his hotel room where he said he was panicking. Nothing was working. He was on location in Martha's Vineyard with his crew and his cast. Three expensive mechanical sharks that weren't working. And then he asked himself this interesting question. He said, what would Hitchcock do? And when he reframed the problem like that, it came to him that what we can't see is the most terrifying thing of all. And then, of course, he didn't show the shark. The sharks, we only see the shark for 4 minutes in that film, like the whole shark for 4 minutes. But so that came to him in a moment. So there's one moment of fixing a problem. And the Dixie Chicks were probably 2 years, you know, being blackballed and banned from country radio. So
the other one that I really loved too is a story with Seth MacFarlane, because you tell the whole story of his career and how he started so young, wanting to be an animator and a cartoonist.
Right.
And then it's literally the last sentence of that whole chapter, spoiler alert, but this is also a story that many people know, that he was hungover, missed a flight, and that flight was one of the planes that went down in 9/11.
Wow.
That's right. The whole Seth MacFarlane empire, because he's created an empire. Yeah. Would not exist if he had not made the mistake of getting drunk and oversleeping and missing his flight.
So that's like a mistake with an immediate ramification. Right. There's something I wanted to read too, because this really, really resonated with me. And this is sort of how you wrap up the book. And it was so smart. And I'm going to take this with me as I try to unstick myself from
her co-host on this show.
a situation that I'm dealing with in my life, in my professional and friend life, where I'm trying to get through a very difficult situation. So I loved this. When an epic mistake feels like it might be career ending or debilitating or humiliating, when you feel like you may have lost your credibility, your livelihood, or even your sanity, it might be destiny preparing you for what you've asked for all along. Just remember to ask one question: what is the hidden gift? And that's such a smart thing, because when you're stuck in the mud and you feel like you have nothing to hang on to, that line, just remember to ask one question: what is the hidden gift? It just gives that little bit of hope and trust it that the universe has a plan for you in some way, and that you will come out of the mud and something better will happen on the other side. And when you're in it, when you're so stuck in it, it's so hard to remember that there is another side to a mistake or a bad situation.
I think that that is the great insight in that book, is that probably in your darkest moment, you should start looking for the gift rather than just wallowing. Like when it just seems like it is that you're in the darkest part of that tunnel, if that's the point where you go, okay, I'm going to calm down. What is the opportunity? If you can get there in your mind, I think you'll be amazed at what you'll find. Like I say in the book, peel the problem like a banana. Because sitting at the heart of the problem is the opportunity. But you just have to recalibrate your thinking in that moment, which is not easy to do, because you feel so wounded and so, you know, hobnailed and so, you know, kneecapped by the problem that you stop looking for that gift.
This is an important way of thinking, not just book for right now, because as Diana mentions, you know, this is collective now. People have been hampered and paralyzed by this pandemic that we're still in as I say this. And, you know, if this plays in 2 years, I hope people don't even know what pandemic means anymore. But right now we are in the middle of it. And I think it's a really important point to look for the silver lining and make it an opportunity, because it's been a whole year for so many people of disappointments that, you know, they need to try to find that. And so I love that there's hope in this book. Now, can I jump just 1 second? I have this with me just to prove that I have it. This has become my Bible. This is called This I Know, Terry's previous book. This book has one of my favorite quotes in it. The book, as everyone who reads Terry knows, it's got amazing insights on marketing. But this one in particular makes you present yourself as a company, really, right? It's for entrepreneurs that, you know, can't get multi-million-dollar marketing campaigns and teams to think like a marketer themselves. And this is a great quote: good marketing makes a company look smart. Great marketing makes a customer look smart, which I got immediately, which makes makes me smart. So if we could just talk marketing in general for a second.
Yeah.
How much of marketing is putting the power in the customer's hands? Is it another way of saying the customer is always right, or is it it's something different?
To me, it means always creating your marketing from the customer's point of view. In other words, the problem that most advertisers have is they fall too in love with their product. Their nose is right up against the glass. And great marketing is about looking at the product from the customer's point of view, getting outside your building as an advertiser and looking back in your window. And that's what I think a lot of marketers always lose sight of, is they talk about us, we, and it should be, this does this for you. This is how this fits in your life. Here's why you should consider it next time you're in the category of buying this product. So it's always about just looking at the product from the other end of the telescope.
And the insight, which seems simple once you say it, but it doesn't occur to everyone, is have a real good think about what your product actually is. Your quote unquote product. If you're selling Coca-Cola, are you actually selling Coca-Cola, or are you selling something more? And Coca-Cola's, obviously done a pretty good job of marketing a sugary syrup.
That's the first chapter in my book, right, Steve, is what business are you really in?
Yeah, what business are you in?
Right. Because, as I say that, Nike isn't in the business of selling running shoes. They're in the business of selling motivation. It's like, if you have a body, you're an athlete. That's basically their story, right? And Michelin Tires isn't selling tires. They're selling safety. So you have to know what people are really buying. It's never the product. And I say in the book, people don't buy 3/4-inch drill bits. They buy 3/4-inch holes. So you have to understand exactly what it is you're selling. Because if you can create your message around what they're buying, then you have an effective message. If you're selling them, if you're creating your message about what the product is, it's not an effective message.
Again, it seems simple when you say it, but there's so many, there's so much bad marketing, and advertising now is so tough, right? Because people, they yeah. stream things. They don't have to watch commercials anymore. Very right. few pick up actual print publications anymore. They can stream past the banner ads mm-hmm. that are on the internet. So it has to still be working, because advertising is paying for all these things that are online. But I guess my main question to you is, how do you save yourself from making a bad ad for whatever it is that you're trying to promote or sell, whether it's yourself or a product or a business that you're in? In these times we're living in now, how do you make a good attention capturing ad when the attention span of humans is literally less than a goldfish right now?
I don't know if I buy that. I know everybody says
it's
that,
science, Terry. It's science. I'm a scientist.
I point to movies. Movies are still 2 hours long.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't shrunk down to 30 seconds or 75 seconds. I think if you have a great story, you will always have a great audience. Marketing has to be bold. It has to be a little bit outrageous. You have to, put that message out there in a fresh way. With social media, you don't need to spend dollars. You can, but you don't have to. It's really about spending time. Television's still a powerful medium. It's not ineffective. It's just inefficient, because it's hard. It's harder to find a small little audience on television because everything's so broad. Steve Jobs never advertised digitally, by the way. He always chose television and billboards, which I always thought was such an interesting thing from a digital visionary. He went old school on all his marketing when he was alive. And I think it speaks to the reach of television and the simplicity of his message, which always worked on a billboard. And if you look at Apple's messages, by the way, Steve, every commercial Apple has ever created shows one person achieving something. It's never a group. It's never a company. It's one person, because that was Steve Jobs' entire mantra, was I'm taking the computer power that IBM wants to hoard and give to corporations, and I'm giving it to you, the individual. And he said that from 1984, that famous commercial that you can YouTube, which is called 1984. From that point on, that's always been Apple's message, right? Because he's selling the 3/4-inch hole. He's not selling the drill bit, right?
And I've noticed listening to a lot of podcasts that, the advertising will come in. And you have the ability to skip 10 seconds. Yeah. I just want to write an ad where every 10 seconds you just scream the name of the product, so that whatever narrative that 30 second or 60 second ad is, it's punctuated by every, if you actually skip it, you're just going to hear my voice screaming the name.
That's the whole problem and task and challenge with advertising. It's so easily skippable in this day and age, in podcasts, on television, and online. There's more ad avoidance technology than there has ever been.
Right. So, I mean, so all the more challenge and opportunity to make great ads, right? To make an ad that has a reward for listening to the ad, let alone the product. So I'm absolutely with you on that. Let me ask you this quickly, and it's not a quick question, but we don't have you for long today because you're running a whole podcast network, for God's sakes. It's amazing that we got this time. Your show, Under the Influence, obviously, very popular CBC radio show, very popular podcast, spurred you on to create an entire podcast network, Apostrophe. And, you know, I have to ask, now with your show being a radio show and a podcast show, what are the differences, if there are any? And now that the world is overfull of podcasts, is there still opportunity in the podcast game? What are the most important things to do? I'm asking for me, because I have this podcast that we're on right now, and we'd love more people to hear it.
Well, the great thing about podcasts over radio shows is there's no time limit,
right?
Which is always so brutal, because my show is 27 minutes and 30 precise seconds long. CBC insists on it being precise. So, I mean, I always have to, trim my stories. The first pass of my show is always long.
Right.
So, you know, my engineer will go, you're 2 minutes and 30 seconds long. And now I got to start trimming all this or take out an entire story. So we try and leave that into the podcast. So our podcast listeners get more show actually than our on-air listeners. Mm-hmm. I have great music on air that I can't use in podcasts. I'll have the Beatles and the Stones and Jack White and because CBC pays the music royalties, but you can't use needle drop music in podcasts. It's illegal. So it's a better listening experience on air than it is in a podcast. So there's a little trade-off in both ways. Your second part of your question is, I think there's a huge opportunity, even though there's 2 million podcasts on Apple, and Google right now. It's so hard to do a great podcast. It is so difficult to do a great podcast, to do the research, to find the interviewees, to do a great interview, to edit it well, to produce it well. That's why I think there's only a handful of shows that really even break a certain threshold of listeners per week. And that just shows you how difficult it is. 2 million podcasts never bothered me. Even when people, screenwriters in Hollywood say, but Hollywood gets 100,000 scripts a year reined in on them. Yeah, 6 of them are good. So I've never thought that the big numbers were scary. I actually think they work in your favor at the end of the day if your product is really good.
And speaking of your podcasts, I really enjoy We Regret to Inform You, mm-hmm. which is the rejection podcast, which sort of lives in the same world as your book. Because the rejection podcast is all about people who were told no and then had to overcome that no. It's not quite a mistake, but it's a similar thing. It's very inspirational as far as
it's the other end of the telescope. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, it also really makes you feel like, when you're listening to Sandra Oh talk about how she wasn't able to get where she needed to go within Canada because the doors weren't opening for her, how then she goes to the States. And that makes it huge. You're kind of like, okay, it gives you that little boost of motivation because you can sort of see how a person's journey can happen with closing doors all the time.
Yeah.
And you can still get to where you want to go.
So many of us, I think everybody in their career gets so many no's in trying to get started. Now that show is interesting because We Regret to Inform You is a show about people with a dream. And then the show stops when they make it. Mm-hmm. In other words, mm-hmm. it doesn't talk about their success. The show ends the second they get their big break because it's trying to break through to get that big break, which is the biggest struggle in your career. Mm-hmm. Is like I kid, but it's true. I sent out 60 resumes trying to get my first advertising job, and I got 61 rejection letters. Like one place rejected me twice. That's how little they wanted me. I mean, it's just, you can't even get your first foot in the door in any business. It's just so hard. So when you look at somebody famous and wealthy and rich and you think, oh, they have it made, but what did it take to get there? What were the beats of their story? How did they rebound from 10 networks saying, we hate your idea? And then that same idea becomes one of the biggest hit shows of the year somewhere else. How does that happen?
Yeah.
So that's what we explore.
I love that.
I was sitting in, this is apropos of nothing. Yeah, I haven't asked this, but I was sitting in the BBDO offices doing a job interview in my advertising days. And I was showing my, you know, my portfolio, my spec book. And the one of the creative directors who was kind enough to meet with me was looking at my book. And he said, you know, this is great stuff, but we need stuff that's better than this stuff you see around here. And he showed me all the award-winning ads from BBDO. And I said to him, if I could write ads better than these, I'd be interviewing you, which he liked, but I still didn't get the job. So,
right.
You know, advertising is a tough game and there's a lot of egos in it. But there's so many stories in it, which is why, you know, Under the Influence can keep going indefinitely, Terry. You're such a wealth of knowledge.
It's true. It's an industry that really spits out a lot of really great and interesting stories every day, every week around the world. And because my show kind of looks at the world of advertising, not just Canada or the US, the stories are endless.
We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now back to the show.
I've promised you we're going to stick to time, so I'm going to end the interview the way that we always end our interviews, which is with a bunch of quick questions.
Quick questions!
Okay.
Terry, I'm going to put you on the spot, even though you're our boss. So the next regret to inform you might be the Canadian Star System podcast. But your favorite three podcasts to listen to right now?
I'm going to pick ones outside of our network just to be fair.
Just to make them feel okay, yeah.
Yeah. I like the Bank Robber Diaries. Okay. It's a podcast where they interview an actual bank robber who robbed, and this is in current day, he robbed over 30 banks in Southern California, and he takes you through how he did it. Wow. He says, here's what I was wearing that day. Here's what I said to the bank teller. I had to park my car four blocks away, and then running with that much money in my pockets posed this kind of a problem. When the FBI caught on to me, here's how I had to outwit the, like, it's fascinating.
And it's the actual robber that does
actual,
it?
Yeah, he did his time. He finally got arrested, spoiler alert, by the FBI, went to jail, did his time, but he's out now, and he's a really great storyteller. Like, his insight into how you rob a bank and what he had to go through, it's
I would listen
it's
to
like
that.
Passing a a car accident. You have to just stare at.
And do you think they're tracking the people that listen to it as prospective bank robbers?
That's the big joke about that is, and I believe they actually asked that question, is this is like a how-to course for bank robbers.
Right, you know?
Yeah. Except he got caught, so...
Yes, he got caught.
He did get caught. Another one I'm listening to now is called The Plot Thickens. And you guys would love this one because it's done by the Turner Classic Movies and Ben Mankiewicz, who always hosts, you know, Turner Classic Movies. He always comes on screen and tells a great story about the movie you're about to see. He has a great podcast out now. The first series is about Peter Bogdanovich, which is really great. And season two is all about Lucille Ball.
Ooh.
And he's a great storyteller, Ben, because his father was the famous Mankiewicz in movies. And his uncle wrote Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. Like, he has a great Hollywood royalty lineage. So he knows what he's talking about. Mm. The other one I like is, I think it's called Against the Rules. I'm trying to think of the host's name now because he took a break from it. I haven't heard it for a little while, but he wrote Moneyball. Michael.
I love that movie. Moneyball.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
Why can't I think of his last name?
Anyway, he has one called Against the Rules.
Lewis?
And he just, yes, Michael Lewis, thank you. And it's a fascinating, he just looks at different aspects of life. I'm going to give you an example. Why does everybody hate referees in sports? And then he'll just get into the world of referees and how, and it's just this fantastic exploration of just the most interesting topics. And because his mind is so great, just the way he tackles stories like Moneyball, et cetera, is fascinating. So those are three that I love right now.
Well, those are three great recommends as far as I can see. And now I'm going to jump to the second quick question because that one wasn't that quick, but I did ask you.
It wasn't that quick.
No. What Canadian star do you think has the best brand right now?
Ooh, there's a good question.
Oh, I know the answer to this.
I would say Ryan Reynolds.
That's the answer.
Yes, I think so. I think so probably, right? I mean, everything he's doing turning to gold, but for the right reasons. He's a philanthropist.
Except for the Mr. Big ad he did.
I didn't even see that, no.
Well, very quickly, you know, there's a lot of spoiler alerts in this, folks. So Sex and the City is back for a reboot. Mr. Big dies in the first episode on a Peloton bike.
Right.
Peloton sales drop 5% the next day. Their stock price drops 5%. The very next day, because Ryan Reynolds is a master at fast advertising, does an ad about Mr. Big with Mr. Big in it.
Yep.
Like within 48 hours, he has it out. And then immediately after that, two women accuse Mr. Big of sexual assault.
Yeah, but that's not on Ryan, in fairness. I mean...
No, it's not. No. But I mean, it's... He has really mastered, not only is he a great actor and very funny, so enjoyable, but he has an advertising agency called Maximum Effort. And he has mastered the art of the 48-hour turnaround. And I think that has added to his brand, just because his commercials become so famous and they're so outrageous and so timely that beyond his acting work, he has had this whole other aspect to his brand.
Because things go by so quickly. Things go viral on Twitter or, social media. And the fact that he can reply so quickly to the thing that is super hot on Twitter right now is unbelievable.
Yeah. And ad agencies can't usually work that fast. There's too much bureaucracy in an ad agency to usually work that fast.
And he's a regular listener to the show. So again, Ryan, if we can squeeze you on in season two, we're going to give it a shot. All right, buddy. No promises. Gosling is already in. Last question for you today, Mr. O'Reilly. What is the best mistake that you have ever made? And I've been informed that if you answer your wedding, that Debbie will find you. She knows where you are. You're in the shed.
She knows where I'm at.
Yeah.
At this moment. There's a red little beam right on my forehead. I don't know if you read the dedication in my book, but let me just read it for you. I have it right here.
The latest book.
It says, dedicated to the worst boss I ever had, who taught me the best lesson, how not to do it. So when I was a young ad writer in my 20s, I had a succession of jobs before I started my own company when I was 29 in 1989. I had one job that was horrible. My boss hated me. He hated every piece of work I did. He never approved anything. He would take my idea and shave off all the corners and make it safe. I think he booed my car in the parking lot. I stayed there for 2 years. And while I was there, I hated it. And when I left that to find another job, when I look back on that time, I thought it was the biggest mistake of my career that I'd wasted two full years of my ladder there. But when I started my own company, I realized that I had learned so much working at that terrible job because I learned how to inspire creative people because he never inspired me. I knew what I needed that I never got. And I knew how to create a creative culture and how to nurture a creative culture. Like all those things that he didn't give me, I was so hyper aware of them that I brought them to my own company. So I realized that was one of the best lessons I ever received.
Well said. And thank you very much, Terry's former boss, for being an arsehole. And now, Terry, the question that we ask everyone on this podcast, because it's literally the podcast name, the Canadian Star System is
in need of bold executives.
Oh, that is a good point.
Not surprising.
Because I think that I know the talent is here. We all know that. It's just that getting people at that level to give the green light.
That is it. That is it. I hear you. I will apply to start my own network. And living next door to the United States is like?
Yeah, there's a good question. I think it's the mouse and the elephant. You just hope the elephant doesn't roll over. That's what I think that is.
Oh, perfect. Of course it was perfect. That brings us to the end of today's interview, which is, as I said, special episode as we head into the holidays. We're in them now. Terry, thank you so much for being on here today, for having us as part of your podcast family. And best of success with the book, My Best Mistake, which also I have to say has one of the best book covers I've ever seen. And I know not to judge a book by its cover, but this one is the rest of the book is just as good. Yeah, I won't give it away, but go find My Best Mistake, because not getting it for someone or for yourself this holiday season would be your worst mistake. And that's the Segway Award. Thank you very much, everyone.
Well done.
High-fiving nobody. Thank you, Terry O'Reilly.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, everybody.
The Canadian Star System is produced by Diana Francis and Steve Patterson in association with the Apostrophe Podcast Network. If you'd like more information on today's guests, please visit our website at canadianstarsystem.ca, where you can find links to their work and their socials. Speaking of socials, you can follow at Canadian Star Pod and at Apostrophe Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Our editor and sound technician is Donovan Deschner of Fracture of Femur Productions. Music by Mark Camilleri of Imagine Sound Studios. Special thanks to Terry O'Reilly, Debbie O'Reilly, Callie O'Reilly, and Nancy Patterson, who is an honorary O'Reilly. And since you're doing such a good job of listening to the credits, there's a bonus clip for you after Steve sings us out.
So give it up for these good nerds, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they went away, you sure wouldn't miss them.
The
Canadian Star System. Hey everyone, Steve here. This episode officially came out just before Christmas 2021, and it wasn't all that Christmassy. So here's a whole Christmas song I wrote called Christmas, Hello, Goodbye. Have as merry a Christmas as possible under the circumstances.
It's that time of year again for friends and family.
Family!
When we call each other, or at least send a text.
Merry Christmas emoji!
To remind ourselves who we used to spend time with.
Time with!
And make sure that our mom still loves us best.
I hear she likes me better.
Everyone says they want to be home for Christmas. But obviously that is not quite true,
'cause I've got other things to do.
'Cause if everyone were in their own homes for Christmas,
Christmas,
we'd be like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone Parts 1 and 2. Christmas time is the only time where pretend that everything is fine.
Everything is fine.
So don't just text or call. Bring on the alcohol. And if you can't be merry, for God's sakes, please just try. Christmas! Hello, goodbye. Except, of course, if you are a small child.
Oh, you just act that way.
Then this time of year is magical and wild.
I see no gift, but that's okay.
There's an obese man in a big red suit who will bring you gifts, so please act
cute.
That's the trick. So much joy brought in such short time. Can't be Canada Post, must be Amazon Prime.
When it must have gotten stolen off the porch.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, why is it called Christmas?
Christmas!
When it's about the birth of baby Jesus Christ.
Seriously, stolen off the porch.
You should not say Merry Christmas.
Christmas!
Or even Merry Christmas.
Christmas!
And if you meet a Jewish friend, well, just say something nice. Christmas time is the only time where we pretend that everything's just fine.
Everything is really not fine.
And most Christmas songs, well, they are way too long.
Just like this one.
And they're often sung by creepy, weird old guys.
Look in the mirror.
Christmas, hello, goodbye.
Hello, goodbye.
Yeah. By the creepiest weirdo guys. So Christmas
has- We're done.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.